alcoholic. And I want to thank you for asking me to speak tonight. It's always an honor and a privilege to be asked to speak for Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to thank my husband for accompanying me here and being my partner in life. Hey! So, yeah, I'm seeing some familiar faces out there. That's good. Somebody's coming back. And, you know, I've been coming back. I want to say happy birthday to Bill, Don. I know Bill from way back at the Orlando Club. My sobriety date is June 20th, 1988, and I am very grateful to be an alcoholic. It's probably been one of the best things that happened to me in my life, was getting sober. When I arrived this evening, it was very fitting. My husband drove me in, and we pulled into the speaker spot, and for some of you that may have remembered Peter Frampton, he was on the radio, and one of his songs was, "Who's won, what won, where the hell did I dine, I don't know, but let's do it again." Right? And that was my anthem in high school. And so I wasn't 21, but it didn't matter. I had a fake ID. So let me start, though, by saying, I gave you my sobriety date. My home group is passing along Big Book Study Wednesday night, and my sponsor's GDA. So, but she's not my first sponsor. I've been through a couple of sponsors. One of my first sponsor was Donna Downer in the program. I swear to God. Yeah, make that stuff up. And she liked Downers, but she was an alcoholic and identified as such. My second sponsor was a woman who died with 50 years of sobriety. Corinne Cheney, Bill Cheney, some of the old timers in the room may remember her and Bill. They were the elder statesmen when I came into AA. But I had a few in between there, and there was a time, for a brief time, that I didn't have a sponsor. Because as we all know, things get real in Alcoholics Anonymous, and it doesn't feel so good sometimes, eh? But I want to just kind of start to. At the beginning, my husband and I were talking on the way here, and I've been sober longer than I drank, which was for a long time. That wasn't the way it was. All I knew was drugs and alcohol. I was born up in the Bay Area. I was the youngest of seven kids. I was the apple of my father's eye, and he was alcoholic. He died alcoholic. I had a normal childhood. We weren't rich, we weren't poor, but I had a lot of love in the family, except my father, as I said, was an alcoholic, and so there was rage, a lot of rage in my family. I remember one time my sister and I, my father woke up the morning after a big drunk, and he was throwing pots from the front hall through the kitchen to the back door. And my sister and I were in our pajamas, and we were outside huddled by the fireplace outside. We were so scared. But that was one of my earliest memories. At 13, my father went out on the boat in San Francisco Bay. I'm from the Bay Area. And he was with another guy. They went over to Jack London Square. They got drunk. They were coming back across the bay, and he fell overboard and drowned in the San Francisco Bay. And at that time, that was pretty much the end of my world. I did not want to participate in life anymore, and I started doing a lot of drugs and alcohol. I want to go back just a little bit because I don't know, you know, it's kind of, when you stay around the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, it's kind of hard to determine, was I always destined to be an alcoholic? Was it hereditary? Was I predisposed? Or was it just circumstances in life that led me down this road where I just didn't want to feel my feelings? But I do know that at 7 years old, my mom, I got in trouble. And at 7 years old, I tried to commit suicide by drinking some Aqua Velvet. And I didn't know any better, you know. But I knew that it was cologne, And I thought, you know, it was poison and it might kill me. And I remember climbing up on my father's dresser and drinking it because I had gotten into trouble and I was just going to end it. And I crawled underneath the bed and I was taking swigs off of it underneath the bed. And that was at 7. So something was up, right? So we fast forward to 13, my damn dad dies. And, you know, I'm shattered. I'm just, it's the end of the world. I don't really like my mother that much. And, I go to drugs and alcohol to ease the pain. And from 13 till 30, I did drugs and alcohol. If not on a daily basis, pretty much all the time. And I never really wanted to quit. I never, you know, said I'm going to stop drinking. There came a time when I'd like to stop doing blow for a while, but the drink was never, you know, I never ever thought I should ever stop drinking. That wasn't the problem, right? So let's see. So 13, my dad dies. I'm going to do kind of a fast forward on this one. 17, I have a 28-year-old boyfriend. He's a drug dealer. I try to go to college up at San Francisco State for a while. It's hard to study journalism up at San Francisco State if you are constantly high and drunk, which I was. But that's the way I went through college. And I didn't last long in college. So I left San Francisco State, moved to Tahoe. That's my mother and my brother thought that would be a good place for me to kind of clean up. So they moved me up to Tahoe, and that's where the party really began. You know, they don't close. And so I stayed awake for the next 2 years. And, but, you know, I had some good times up there. I met emergency room doc. He became my new boyfriend and partied. Big party, 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 party. I was a party girl. I was a bar fly. I landed a job up in Tahoe, and I was manager of a nightclub, and that was really super fun. I had a bar tab. It was the first time in my life I had a bar tab, but I had one. It was perfect for an alcoholic, right? We drink for free. So that was great. And then I got into an accident up in Tahoe, and my boyfriend didn't show up at the club, and I ran out of blow, and I was a bad drunk. You know, my first treatment for alcoholism was cocaine, and you know, and so anyhow, he didn't show up. I was drunk, I was sad. Got in my car, tried to drive home, ran into a railroad tie fence, went through the windshield, ended up at the emergency room. Cops caught me. And but at the time, I had that emergency room doctor friend, and his friend was on duty, and they wouldn't let me take him to jail. But they did detain me. So they detained me. They wouldn't let me draw blood, but they detained me. So I'm in the jail, and I'm not in bars, but they had me, I think I was like in a room. Yeah, it was a room, but I was all in my party dress and my high heels. And they were like, you know, you're going to stay here. And I said, okay. And so, but I remember crying, and, you know, there were some women down the hall that were like in the jail cell, and they were like, shut that bitch up. You know, I mean, I was just like, and I, with my little dress, my little gray party dress was all blood splattered because they had given me a reverse mohawk at the emergency room, and yeah, I was bad shape, you know, but I still had my heels on, and so I that's the kind of girl I was. And I called my brother, who was up in Tahoe with me at the time, and I said, you know, can you come get me? And he was too high, you know, at 6 o'clock in the morning, so he sends his girlfriend to come get me. So she comes, and, you know, now this is the time where you might do a little bit of soul searching. So I ride back at the house that my mother owned at the time in Tahoe, and you know, I think a normal person, they've been drunk, they're hungover, they've tried to go home, they went through the windshield, they ended up at the emergency room, they've ended back up at the police station, they might want to go upstairs and go to bed, right? But, you know, my thing was I went upstairs, changed out of my party dress, and I came back downstairs and poured myself some Crown Royal and big fat doobie and, you know, big fat line. And, you know, and just kept it going. That's the way it was for me, you know. I didn't think to stop and maybe go to bed or stop and say, I got a problem here. But I will say after that, when somebody noticed me, I went to the bank because I was working at that nightclub, and I went the next day to make a deposit, and they're like, what happened? You know, and I told them, and then she said, you know, why don't you come to a meeting? I'm like, a meeting? She's like, yeah, you know, it's an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. I'm like, now, I had an aunt that was alcoholic, Aunt Mary, and Aunt Mary was a real alcoholic, and we used to take her to the liquor store, and then take her to the hotel room and push her out the door of the car, and that's where she wanted to be, right? And so I knew what a real alcoholic was, and I wasn't that. And so they were coming to get me to go to this meeting. Of course, I got stoned before they came and got me in. And then we went to the meeting, and it was a woman's meeting. You know, I was like, oh my God, I definitely don't want to be here. And so I remember kind of laying down. I was at some woman's, you know, home who was gracious enough to open the doors and let us in for the meeting. And I remember kind of looking around at these women and thinking, you know, oh my God, these poor women. And this isn't for me. But they said, you know, they were really nice and generous, and they said, here's a big book, and, you know, take it home and study it, you know. And I'm like, okay, see ya. And so that's when I was like 22, you know, and I was on the road for the next 8 years, right? I didn't slow down. And when I came, I moved, though. We moved, don't we? I moved. I moved from Tahoe down to San Diego. My brother was like, you got to go back to college, Gail. And I said, sure, I'll go back to college. Why not? Sure. I liked school. I did well in school when I was there. And so I went to San Diego City College, and my brother said, you know, if you come down to San Diego, you got to stop doing drugs. And he said, drugs, not alcohol. So I said, fine, I can handle that. So I started going to City College, and I was doing pretty good at City College. I was in their journalism department, communications, broadcasting, and I was able to get a gig doing news on KSDS. I got a scholarship to KFMB Radio. Life was good, and, you know, but I was still, I broke the contract with my brother because I was starting to get high again. And, but I promised, okay, no more nighters. But I was still drinking this whole time, you know, and I had, if I was going to drink, which I had to drink, I had to have a bag to stay upright. And so that's just the way it was for me. And, anyhow, so, you know, good things were happening to me as far as I was still functioning and holding down. I was in the radio news business. I was I transferred from City College over to UCSD, and I was trying to pass statistics and biology, and I gotta tell you, those are two really hard classes, very hard classes, and if you don't open the book and study, you fail, right? It's pretty damn easy. You can't wing it in either one of those. And, of course, I was trying to wing it, and I tried to wing it three times, and I failed that. Right. If nothing, I was a persistent student. I was a persistent high student. Persistently high student. Anyhow, so I'm doing that at UCSD. But in the meantime, I'm having great success in broadcasting. And so I'm a broadcaster, and I'm covering the city of San Diego and news cars, and, you know, and I would go to Golden Hill, and I'd see this house on 30th, you know, I'd go there because there was a lot of murders up in there. It wasn't all cleaned up in a really bitchin' neighborhood that it is today, but there was a lot of murders up there, and so I was always, I was the night shift, and I was up there cruising around in the news car, you know, and I'd look up, go by this 30th Street house, and I'd see big Victorian house, and I'd see all these men, you know, like really beat up men with cigarettes and coffee cups hanging out on the front porch, you know, and I'd be going, I'm like, damn, I go, God, they're such losers, what are they doing in that house, you know, but I would drive and go to my stories and, you know, do my thing, you know, do the reporting, you know, and so didn't think too much of that house other than the fact that I thought it was very, it was sad, it was a sad house, and so, So, you know, things keep going downhill spiritually for me. Spiritually. I am very lonely. I am very, and that's not because I don't have people around me. I have people around me. I have boyfriends and girlfriends and But you know, it just, I knew that it was coming, kind of coming to an end. And finally it did come to an end. And I'd been up on a jag up in Sonoma County with a guy that I was dating at the time. And we had bought 3 bottles of really good wine that we were going to bring home. And of course, you know, I talked him into drinking them all up there. And, you know, and I came home and I was drinking Bloody Marys or something on the airplane home, and I had to go to work that day, and I had some blow, and I was doing some pot, and, you know, finally I called in, and I said, you know, I don't think I can come into work today. He goes, oh, no, 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 you come in. I go, no, I don't really feel that. No, you come in. And so then I called Narcotics Anonymous. It was busy. I called AA Central, I think, and I didn't get through. I called my insurance. They put me on hold, so I went into the radio newsroom. And I'm sitting there, and I was done. I was pooped. I was 30 years old, and I was pooped. I was tired. And I really didn't want to have to call my dealer anymore. And so at the time I had a union. I was a part of a union. And I ended up at Scripps McDonald's Center. And so I went home that evening. I remember I called my girlfriend and my roommate, and I said, listen, you know, I turned myself in at work. She's like, oh, my God, what did you do? And I'm like, I'm done. I'm tired. I'm tired of drinking. I'm tired of the drugs. I need some help. And I go, meet me at home at 5, okay? She goes, okay. Because I go, you need to give me a ride to Scripps McDonald Center. And she goes, okay. So she comes home, and, you know, meanwhile, I had stopped at 7-Eleven, and I got my St. Pauli's Dark. I like the girl on the beer bottle. So I got my St. Pauli's Dark beer, and I got my little Behringer machine, and I'm grinding it up, and I'm smoking my last big fat doobie. And I said, you know, I was living in Mission Valley at the time. I said, hey, can you take me, let's take the long way to Scripps McDonald Center from Mission Valley. So we took Genesee, right? So I finished a couple of St. Pauli's, smoked a big fat doobie, and did the rest of my blow, and then she kind of did a tuck and roll at McDonald Center, right? So I get in the McDonald Center, and holy Toledo. So I'm good for the first night because it's all new. And then I wake up the next morning, and then I turn maniacal, right? I'm like, what am I doing here? But I had kind of, I'd ratted on myself, you know, because I knew me, and I knew that my job was like the sacred cow, and I kind of put it over here, but I told everybody at work I was going in, you know, for treatment. So I ended up being so maniacal, they put me on Haldol for about 3 days, and I ate ice cream and sat on the couch and saw double, and that was like my first introduction, okay, into treatment. Yeah, I was very, very familiar. And so, I had a counselor there. Her name was Nora Dearheart, and I called her Nora Noheart because I hated her, and she was, you know, you are going to go through this program, and then because you have such a long history of drugs and alcohol, we're going to ship you out to Rancho La Brea. And I was like, oh, God, you're kidding me. And so I said, no, I don't think so. And then, of course, my family comes down because it's family night. And so we're sitting around with a bunch of other people. And, of course, my family, my brother and my mother, or my brother particularly, is a little inappropriate. And so they're like, has anybody been drinking tonight? My brother's like, yeah. And my mom raises her hand, you know. I'm like, my family, of course. And, you know, that's the way it was. I mean, nobody thought I was an alcoholic in my family. My father was the alcoholic. I just partied hard. But compared to the rest of my family, I'm the youngest of 7 kids. I was good. I went to college, you know. So I had a job, you know, a real job. They had jobs that, you know, they're shady. And Anyhow, so I go out to Rancho La Brea, and I'm out at Rancho La Brea, and I stay there 30 days, and then I'm like, you know, I'm a professional woman. I can't go to Turning Point. I can't go to Crossroads, for God's sake. I need to go somewhere nice. And so, I end up at this recovery home for professional women, and it's me and this other drunk named Mary, and we have a maid,
We got a housekeeper and we got a therapist, right? Well, then 3 days, Mary's drunk and it's just me. And so, you know, I hang in there, though. I hang in there for 30 days and then I go back to my condo. And so I've been hospitalized for about, institutionalized for about 3 months, and it gave me a great start in AA. I got a sponsor right away. I saw a woman, Donna, as I told you, she was my first sponsor. So that was great. And so while I was out at Rancho, I went back out to Rancho Labrie to see a girl, one of my roommates at the time, get a 30-day or 60-day token. And when I go out there, you know, I'm on the prowl now. I'm 30. I've, like, got 3 months sobriety. I'm on the prowl. I'm looking for him in AA. And so, you know, I'm at the pool area of Rancho Labrie. It was a pretty cool treatment facility out there. And I'm at the pool where the meeting is, and he walks in, you know, and this is a blonde guy, okay? The guy's 26. He's, like, bulked out. Beautiful surfer. And I'm like, okay, I think we can stay, all right? There's a future in AA. So I kind of make eye contact. Hey, how you doing? You know, downtown. But, you know, when I was early in sobriety, and there's a lot of people in sobriety that are here early in sobriety tonight here, and I got to tell you, you got to get involved. And that's what my sponsor made me do. She made me go to stupid AA dances, and, you know, just she pushed me, and my friends, this group of friends that I had, I got an AA buddy, this one girl that I just hung with. We were road dogs. We went everywhere together. And, you know, it was really important at the time, and it was drilled into me to not only work the steps, but to also be really actively involved in AA, participate in the meetings and, you know, get commitments. And so that's what I was doing. It didn't feel real good at first, but I pushed through. I did, because you know why? I did what my sponsor told me to do. And so, which was great. So one of these, so like three weeks later, it was too quick at that Rancho Labrie meeting to get my passing my phone number, but so, I'm at this AA dance, I think it was an AA dance, and up in North Park somewhere, and, you know, he was on the dance floor. I'm in the back there sitting watching all these sober people try to dance, which was pretty funny. And so, you know, it's on Judgment Row, you know how we are. And so I'm sitting back there, and he walks in, and it's the blonde guy. I'm like, oh, my God, here he is. And so I, you know, I'm not shy, and I walk up. I'm like, hey, don't we know each other? He's like, I don't know, dude. I said, yeah, Rancho Labrie. Oh, yeah. So he talks. So I give him my number. I don't hear from him for, like, 2 days go by. Finally, he calls, okay? And it's hot and heavy for, like, 8 months, right? But unbeknownst to me, if nothing changes, nothing changes. I know that now because I've worked the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? A couple times, several times. You know, and when the pain gets great, I go back to step one and I start over again because that's what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. And because nothing had changed for me here, inside, nothing changed with my relationships. And so I kept committing the same mistakes over and over and over. Because I was a taker. I took everything I could from the relationship. I didn't want to compromise. I didn't want to give. I'm selfish. Very selfish. Narcissistic, actually, is a better title for me. Anyhow, so he left me. He left because guess where he lived, people? He lived at that sad, sad house on 30th Street. He was a pathfinder, for God's sakes, right? Holy Toledo, yeah. Uh-huh. He was one of those men, when he told me where he was living, I'm like, where are you, huh? And I'm thinking, holy God, it's the guys with the coffee cups and the cigarettes, those poor men. So, but that's what, you know, that's what I was attracted to at 90 days of sobriety. And, so anyhow, so, you know, he left me because he was being spoon-fed AA in a treatment home, and I was living in my condo, you know, working, going to meetings and working with my sponsor, but she was taking her time with me, and it was a good thing that she took her time with me. I remember, I wanted to do my four-step, she's like, no, we're going to wait. No, you know, you just kind of sit in step three for a while. So anyhow, he left me. And I proceeded to start really working the steps. And I also not only did the steps, but I also did a relationship inventory. Another sponsor took me through a relationship inventory where I looked at everything, went over every single relationship in my life, and what happened in it. What was my part in it? What was the fabric made of? And what were, you know, how did it unravel and why did it unravel? And it was very enlightening. It was very insightful, just like the fourth step is. And I learned a lot about myself doing those steps. Anyhow, I really, you know, I had fallen in love with that man, and I was hoping that maybe one day we would get back together. But, you know, 6 months went by, a year went by, another 6 months, another year went by. And I stayed sober. You know, they say, don't get in a relationship, you know, you get drunk, and, you know, you might break, you know, break up, and then you get drunk, you know. And I got into that relationship when I was 90 days sober. And we broke up, you know, before I turned a year. And I didn't drink over it. You find a way in AA if you really want to stay here, and you make contact with a higher power. And I want to impress upon you, it doesn't have to be God, but it's God for me. But it doesn't have to be. You just have to find a way to find a higher power to help you stay sober. Because for me, I had to give up that control. You know, I gave it over to the group. I gave it over to a sponsor. I gave it to the meetings. I gave it to my commitments at the meetings. You know, reading the big book, going to big book studies, just being a part of. That's, I had to give it over, turn it over. And find a way to stay sober. So I broke up with that. He broke up with me, actually. Broke up with him and just moved on with my sobriety, you know. Moved on with it. Got more involved in the program. Started sponsoring other women in the program. Today I sponsor 6 women in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. So it's this program is, you got to find that contact with a higher power. So I am still engaged in AA at this time. I don't know, I got 3 or 4 years by this time, and I am still engaged. I'm going to the conference. The AA Roundup was a special one that I would always go to. And I'm on the dance floor, and I'm dancing with some other guy there, and he walks up and taps me on the shoulder, but it's that guy. It's that guy from Pathfinders, you know, and he looks just as good as he always did. And we've been together ever since. We ended up getting married in AA, and we just celebrated 22, thank you, honey, 22 years of blissful marriage. Yeah, but thank you. Let me tell you, 22 years is a lot. So, but, you know, it's not to say that we haven't had our hardships in marriage and in AA. That sponsor with 50 years, she died on us.
Rob's sponsor?
His first sponsor died on us. His second sponsor died on us. You know? His sponsee died on us. My sponsee died on us. People go out. People get old. People, life goes on, man. But we don't drink. Neither one of us drink. We get another sponsor. We get another sponsee. I am of the firm belief that I carry the message, I don't carry the drunk. I've gone through a lot of women that don't want what I have. They think they do. But when the rubber hits the road, they don't want it. And they go back out. And that's okay. Or they go somewhere else. I don't know where they go. I don't care, man. Hasta luego, you know. I got things to do in AA, okay? Let me tell you. And I want to tell you I got things to do because, you know, I was in broadcasting, so my broadcasting radio career led to a television career. I was the NewsAid investigative reporter for 7 years. I did fun things. I've met wonderful people. I was in the room with Mother Teresa. I've interviewed movie stars and leaders. Desmond Tutu was in San Diego. I did that. I was on the welcome tarmac for the Air Force One. You know, I've done and seen a lot of things, and my career took off, and I was able to work in television for 7 years as well. And then, you know, as things happen in TV especially, you get too old, and you're making too much money, or they take a turn, and they want to do a different deal. They shut down the investigative unit. And I lost my job, and, you know, I was laid off. But I left that job on very, very good terms. And a lot of people at that news station are still really good friends of mine. What happened is I left that. I ended up going back, getting my degree in political science from UCSD. I got sober, you know. I got sober, and I got a study group, right? And I sat in the front of class, in both classes, statistics and biology, right? I became an A. Right? I wasn't an A student, but I was a B plus, okay? A B plus, bitchin' plus, okay? I was a bitchin' plus student in statistics and A, and biology. And I ended up getting my degree late. But I got my degree, okay? And then, so I got laid off from News 8. And I thought, you know, what the hell am I going to do, right? What the hell am I going to do? And I thought, you know what, I'm going to open my own business. So I did, Stewart Consulting. And I was, before I knew it, I was working on a judicial campaign. I was working on a congressional campaign. I was working for doing public relations. And then this woman who I'd known in my new broadcasting career said, hey, let's... I need you on my campaign. I'm going to run for district attorney. And I said, fine. And so I helped her on her campaign. And we were able to unseat the incumbent. And it's been 14 years ago, I was landed a job at the district attorney's office. So, and you got to know, back when I was like, with that 28-year-old, I was 17, he was 28, that boyfriend, I was like breaking the law, right? Everything was fun. We were doing all kinds of stuff, bad stuff. And today I'm making the law. I don't break the law, I make the law, okay? So I work for the district attorney's office, and now I'm a registered lobbyist. And I go to Sacramento, and I shepherd legislation through the legislature today. That's my job. It's amazing. I work on the statute in the penal code, okay? I know more about the penal code than I probably should, but than I ever wanted to when I was drinking and using, but now I know it, and I like it. I work with brilliant people at the district attorney's office. So that's one thing that I'm still doing in my life. My career has just kind of went whoosh, to the fourth dimension, right? It's wonderful. I have a great job. But more importantly, I got to tell you that I've also done other amazing things in my life. And the only reason I'm telling you this is because if you're new tonight, or if you're not new, but you're still in early recovery, you're thinking, how am I ever going to... It comes. Just wait for the miracle. They used to tell me that, and I'm telling you that tonight. Just wait for the miracle, because it happens. Things start falling into place, and life gets really, really good, okay? Those downers, like I told you, you know, we've lost several people in AA, but it gets good. So I was able to hike Mount Whitney. I started hiking. Hiked Mount Whitney, hiked all the mountains around here, dragged his butt up and down him. And then I went up to Mount Whitney, hiked Mount Whitney, went to Kilimanjaro in Tanzania, hiked, summited Kilimanjaro. That was hard, found God up there. Very hard. and then I got into a new sport, and now I'm a triathlete, and I do triathlons. And so, I mean, it's all there. Not to mention, I wanted to be a blues singer, so now I'm a blues singer. I have my own band. It's called Give Me Back My Rig. We're playing at the Parlor Lounge next Friday night. Okay, and then what else do I do? I want to learn how to play harmonica, right? So I looked at YouTube. I taught myself how to play harmonica. So I'm playing harmonica next Friday night up there. And, you know, I mean, I do so much. So, and I got to tell you, you know, my family, they're all messed up. So recently, I know I only have a few short minutes here, but one thing that it has allowed me, sobriety has allowed me to do, is to be there for my family. Now, my family is very dysfunctional, okay? Very dysfunctional, as I told you. You know, no one thought I was alcoholic because I was basically normal in my family to them. And so recently, my mother, who is 96 years old, she caught the flu. And as you know, for elderly people, that's deadly, right? And she ended up in the hospital. So my sister, who's normal, and a nurse, we flew up to be with my mother. And everybody else in my family is friggin' MIA, okay? Just MIA. I don't know where the hell they are, but they're not at the hospital when my mom needs them. And, you know, my sister was kind of like, you know, we gave up, you know, I dropped everything and just left. And, you know, I got to tell you, it feels good to be a good daughter and to be there. And even though it's unfair, I had to change all my plans, and none of my family, my other sisters, changed their plans, or my brother, or brothers. I had three brothers, three sisters. And me and my one sister, we did a 48-hour stint in the ICU with my mother, and I slept in this damn recliner chair that was so uncomfortable. But it didn't matter, because when my mom woke up in the middle of the night and she said, she moaned or said something, we were right there for her. And I got to tell you, she was released today. And I think she's going to be okay. She went home today. Yeah. So I want to leave you with this, okay? Had I kept on the path that I was on, I would have missed all this beautiful, beautiful life. Beautiful life. I would have never known my potential. I still don't know my potential. You know what? My goal this year, my goal is to go to friggin' nationals triathlon for the sprint or Olympic division. Okay, that's my goal this year. That's what I really want to do. I want to represent our country. And then if you place in nationals, you go international and you represent the United States. So those are, that's the kind of things that I'm thinking about, wanting to do, because I believe AA is the vehicle. Okay? This is our journey. It's not reaching the destination. The journey is where it's at, man. This is it. But you've got to not drink. That's what we do. We just don't drink. So I wish all of you the wonderful goodness and gracious love that has been bestowed upon me by women and men in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, that has helped keep me sober, and to my higher power that I choose to call God, that has come to me and when I have abandoned him in AA. In my sobriety, I have abandoned God because we have experienced some severe losses, my husband and I. But I always come back. He finds me somehow and taps me on the shoulder and says, I'm here. Just come on back to the fold. And I feel so blessed that I've never had to walk back out the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. I keep doing what they tell me to do, and I don't have to come back in as a newcomer. I don't know how it works or why it works, but it works for me that way. And so I just wish all of you, just if I could just have all of everybody in this room just stay sober for the rest of your life. Wouldn't it be wonderful? God bless you.